Welcome to Trailblazers, where we explore the inspiring journeys of entrepreneurs and industry leaders who are redefining success and making a lasting impact. These game changers are driving progress in our region and around the world. Welcome to Trailblazers. I'm your host, Melody Bradford. Today we meet a leader whose own story is deeply connected to the power of education. Dr. Renato Lajara arrived in the United States from the Dominican Republic as a child, became an English language learner in Philadelphia schools, and ultimately found his calling in education, a career that took him from classroom teacher to principal, district leader, and assistant superintendent has now brought him to Bethlehem, where as the district's first Latino superintendent, he steps into leadership of one of Pennsylvania's largest school districts. But behind the doctorate and the superintendent's title is a much more personal story, one involving adversity, a teacher who changed the trajectory of his life, and a belief that every child deserves to feel safe, seen, and capable of achieving more than they may believe possible. Dr. Lajara, welcome to Trailblazers. It's great to have you here.
Thank you so much. It's great to be here.
Yeah. So I want to go back before the title. Before you became superintendent, how did you get your start? Tell us about the young boy who came to this country from the Dominican Republic and what your childhood and your early experiences in Philadelphia were like.
So my family immigrated here when I was 7 years old. I'm the youngest of 5 boys. Mm-hmm. My mom and dad, we, like any immigrant family, wanted to live the American dream and afford us the opportunity to have an education and, you know, to live the American dream and become successful citizens. So we moved to Philadelphia in 1984, and the neighborhood that we came to was predominantly Puerto Rican and African American neighbors, and you know we were the first Dominican family to move in that vicinity. Like you know, within like 20 miles, we were like the first Dominican family to move there. So it was very challenging for us. Mm-hmm. We were 5 boys, so you know, with that came a lot of challenges. Everybody wanted to, you know, test us and see what we were made of. So it was challenging, even for me as a 7-year-old boy going to school every day, to elementary school. You know, I had to fight to defend myself because kids would wait for me outside and they would be like, hey, he's one of the new family that came in.
Yeah.
You know, and then the older kids would send the younger kids, like, you know, after me. So, you know, right away it was adversity that we had to face right away. But, you know, growing up, you know, my family depended on, you know, government assistance, you know, until my dad got on his feet and was able to get a job. My mom was actually a seamstress. She worked from home and she would make dresses and pants and clothes and things like that. I still remember, you know, sitting under the sewing machine and helping her cut, you know, the pads that would go underneath,
you know,
the blouses. So it was, yeah, you know, it was definitely challenging, you know. Went through the whole public school system in Philadelphia and, you know, graduated. And, you know, it was difficult. But, you know, through adversity and never giving up and some people that I'm sure we'll talk about later, you know, stepping in and supporting me. I'm here today as the superintendent of Bethlehem.
Mm-hmm. So you mentioned just briefly there that there were some people that made some differences in your life. Mm-hmm. Can you talk to me about the teacher who changed your trajectory? You've spoken about a second grade teacher who recognized something in you and advocated for you when you were still learning English. What did that teacher see in you? And what did that experience teach you about the responsibility educators have to see the potential in a child before the child may see it in themselves?
Sure. So what I always tell anywhere that I have led, I've always said that you know, many of our children come to school with 2 book bags, right? The first one is the one that has the tangible stuff. Like Monday was the first day of school and everybody was so happy. All of our kids coming in with brand new book bags, showing it off, you know. And I always think about kindergarten teachers that have to help their kindergarten students for the first time unpack that book bag. You know, you have the colorful pencil cases and the brand new notebooks and the book bag that they want to show off, their little lunchbox. That's the book bag that we can see, right? Mm-hmm. The one that has the tangible stuff. But there's also an invisible book bag that teachers don't see. And that's all of the trauma, you know, the hunger, the embarrassment, the abuse that a lot of our kids go through that we as educators don't see. So I always task my teachers, you know, as educators, we need to unpack both, right? And that's what my second grade teacher, Mrs. Willis, did for me, right? She didn't do it knowing the things that I was going through and the trauma that I was going through as a kid. But she did it because she had such an inviting classroom, and she was so warm and welcoming and loving. I still remember the way that she smelled. Right? And, you know, she hugged us all the time, loved on us. So every time that I walked into Mrs. Willis's classroom, walked through that threshold, I forgot about all of the things that I was going through. You know, I had to walk through three drug corners every morning just to get to elementary school.
Wow.
As I said, walking back home, some days I would have to fight kids that, you know, just wanted to you know, to bully me or just to take a shot at me. And, you know, I grew up in a neighborhood where, just in my neighborhood, I lost 23 friends to murder.
Wow.
And, you know, I lost more in you know, that lived in other neighborhoods. But just in my neighborhood, I lost 23 friends, you know, to murder. So it was definitely a challenging situation. And, you know, Mrs. Willis was really able to help me forget about those things. And she did so much that I looked for her for 35 years.
Mm.
And in 2022, I was able to find her. She had no social media, but I found, you know, I found her through a colleague, and she was still afraid of COVID. Because I wanted to give her a hug just to say, you know, thank you, right? But we got to talk through Zoom, and she was 83 years old at the time,
oh.
And she wasn't tech savvy, so I at least got her to navigate Zoom, and I could only see like half her face,
uh-huh.
So I had to work with her to show her whole face. And, you know, throughout that, you know, we kept in contact, and she even spoke to my principals when I became an assistant superintendent through Zoom.
Mm-hmm.
She gave them like words of advice and motivation, you know, talked to them about motivations. And I actually got to tell her the things that I was actually going through, right,
mm-hmm.
when she was my teacher. And I told her that she was my inspiration,
mm-hmm.
and that I'm Dr. Lajada today because of her. So I can imagine the joy that she felt. And, you know, I used to always tell her, like, look, I want you to meet my family. I want, you know, be able to give you a hug. And she was like, well, I'm still afraid of COVID.
Yeah.
And then, you know, we kept in contact. She would always, you know, Merry Christmas, Happy Thanksgiving, how you doing? And, you know, make sure that you work with your principals to teach our kids how to read, because we're forgetting about that. And then she, you know, unfortunately passed away. But I was able to go to her funeral and speak at her funeral. Her family was very happy that I did that, you know, because I really got to tell everyone that she was really inspirational for me.
Yeah.
And that I always tell that story about her wherever I go to lead. That's what I lead with, because all of us, all of our teachers, as educators, we always need to unpack those two book bags and work with all our children to get that light bulb to flick for them.
I'm misty-eyed over here. And shout out to all the second grade teachers. My second grade teacher said, you know, you have to send me a copy of your first book when you write it. And this year I finally put one, you know, pen to paper and mm-hmm. partnered with a fantastic organization to do so. But, you know, I think sometimes in the course of our days, whether you're in education or business or whatever, don't underestimate the power that a little bit of encouragement or empowerment for your colleague or your student or whomever, you know, can really kind of not only change a person, but the trajectory of their entire life.
Yes.
That's a really inspiring story. So you went from teacher to principal, then into district leadership, and ultimately to assistant superintendent overseeing 15 schools and more than 8,000 students in Philadelphia. What did each of those leadership chapters teach you that you couldn't have learned from a textbook or your doctoral program?
Obviously, is you know, they don't teach you the human aspect, right? And the realities that we as educators face every day, especially teachers.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, as I mentioned, every day teachers face different challenges with multiple students, right? Because every student is a world in their brain, is what I say,
mm-hmm.
and every student has a different, you know, has a different challenge. And for me, it was always looking at the different challenges that my students had, because, you know, I when I worked in Philadelphia, all of the schools that I led were in very, very challenging neighborhoods. And even mm-hmm. as an assistant superintendent, the schools that I oversaw were in very challenging neighborhoods. So, you know, what it doesn't teach you is that you always have to look beyond the curriculum,
mm-hmm.
is what I tell teachers, right? And I know it's hard. You know, teaching today is hard. And you know, teachers know that sometimes, you know, they have to be the kids, the student's therapist, and they have to be the nurse. They have to be the, you know, you know, the mom, the dad, and just, you know, be there for those students. But I want them to know that it matters, right? And that, that every time they do that, they're seen and heard and really loved and appreciated by me, because I know that although it's tough, it's difficult, it's beyond planning a lesson. And again, like I said, it's beyond the curriculum. It's definitely what many of our students need, like I did, just to succeed in life and to really have somebody to spark that light bulb in you to realize that you can be somebody no matter what challenges you have, no matter what zip code you live in, mm-hmm. you know, no matter who or what you believe in, you know, you can be successful mm-hmm. and become something of yourself. If you have one person that just says believes in you and sparks that and ignites that fire into you.
It's the whole child approach.
Yes.
Yeah. So talk to me a little bit about the decision to come to Bethlehem. You had a significant leadership role in Philadelphia. Mm-hmm. So why Bethlehem? Why did you see here? What did you see here that made you say, you know, this is where I want to leave? This is where I want to take the next chapter. Yeah.
So, you know, I tell the story a lot, and I need people to know that I wasn't one of those folks that was applying to all these places, like to be a superintendent. I knew that I wanted to be a superintendent one day, but it needed to be the right fit. Mm-hmm. And it needed to be a place that I knew I could make a difference. And I knew I needed to be a place that I know I would embrace and that they would embrace me. So when the position became available, a lot of my mentors were, you know, reached out to me and they said, Randy, listen, we think you're a great fit for Bethlehem, and this is a great opportunity. I've never heard of Bethlehem, never been here.
Okay.
So before I submitted my application, I filled it out. I knew I was going to apply, but I said, you know what? Let me go visit before I submit this application. So I drove here by myself. You know, I just took a drive.
And then you fell in love. No.
And, yeah, I did. I mean, talk about love at first sight, right?
It's hard not to.
Yeah, I drove here, and you know, came down Hayes Street and then saw the South Side and the homes and just the neighborhood vibe. I just felt like I was in North Philadelphia where I grew up. I was like, wow. And then just right there instantaneously, I was like, okay, I can see this, right? So I'm coming down, then you see the steel stacks.
Yeah.
Then I go to the, you know, to the North Side. I go to Bethlehem Township. I go to Hanover, Freemansburg. You know, I go to all these different townships, and then just the diversity. I stopped in different restaurants just to talk to people, and it was just a vibe. The vibe. I just knew I was in the right place, and so far, the way that this community has embraced me, and I'm about to get emotional. Like the way that they have embraced me has been. I mean, I couldn't ask for anything better.
Yeah.
And I hope that they feel the love and appreciation that I have for everyone that has embraced me and that I know I'll meet in the future.
Yeah, and you know, I think you'll find that you'll have a great support system around you, both internally as well as externally. You know, from a regional perspective, I had Dr. Silva on a few months ago, and we had talked about his retirement. But Bethlehem School District continues to be one of the most progressive in our area,
yes.
If not the entire state. So. You've had the opportunity to begin experiencing the district from the inside. What are you hearing from students, teachers, administrators, and families? And what are those conversations teaching you about what Bethlehem needs from its superintendent right now?
So, you know, what I've heard is, and what I've heard and I can testify to is that this is an amazing district. Mm-hmm. We do so much for our kids, so much for our students. There are so many activities for them to do. There are so many sports for them to play. Whatever they aspire to be, we have it here in Bethlehem. And, you know, what I think they need from me is somebody to be their champion and somebody to be their cheerleader. So that's why if you haven't seen my social media yet, you know, I'm all over social media and going everywhere and meeting everyone and just telling our story, right? Our district, I believe wholeheartedly, and I'm going to prove this, is if not the best in the Commonwealth, it will be the best in the nation. Because we do so much already mm-hmm. that when I got here, you know, you always have a vision of, you know, when I become superintendent, you know, I'm going to implement this, when I'm going to implement that, I'm going to make sure that all my students have, you know, the mental health needs that they need, you know, that the adults have the support that they need, you know, that we create students that are ready for the workforce, that are ready for the military, ready for, you know, if they want to start their own business, if they want to go to college. And that's my vision, right? Mm-hmm. My vision is my former deputy in Philadelphia used to call it the four E's, right? So it's in enrollment in a 2 or 4 year institution, employment, enlistment in the armed forces, and then entrepreneurship, right? Mm-hmm. So I want to make sure that we do a well-rounded, we give well-rounded opportunities for our students, mm-hmm. that any one of those four categories, they can be successful in if they so choose any one of those.
That's an exciting initiative. And, you know, shout out to those that are in workforce development and entrepreneurship, mm-hmm. some of which have been on this program. But I hope that, you know, those connections have a chance to come to fruition, because it'll provide a lot of fantastic opportunity for students. When you look 3 to 5 years down the road, what do you want Bethlehem School District to look and feel like? What is the vision that you're trying to build beyond those four E's, mm-hmm. and beyond, you know, having maybe regional, state, or national recognition? Is there anything, even from a human perspective, as far as, you know, mental health, like, how does that all play into it? What's the vision from that perspective?
Yeah, so my vision is to create a place and to create a district where we meet all children where they're at, mm-hmm. right? And no matter what their needs are, you know, whether it's food insecurity, whether it's mental health, you know, whether it's physical health, you know, beyond the curriculum, to make sure that we cover all of those areas and all of those aspects, so that no student and no family has any needs in this district. And like I said, a lot of those things are there. I'm just looking to strengthen them and make sure that if we don't have enough, that I work with, you know, stakeholders, community organizations, and whoever it is that we have partnerships with, to make it stronger and make sure that they get those
opportunities.
Those opportunities.
Sure. So curious, from your vantage point, what do you feel is the biggest challenge facing public education right now? And what do you believe we are getting wrong about how we talk about that challenge?
So, you know, as public education, we're facing a lot, right? So a lot of people, you know, I feel like public education is under attack, right? A lot of people don't respect it, and they don't feel like it's the best education, right? But I believe that public education is the best, mm-hmm. right? Because it's created for neighborhoods, it's created for our communities, and mm-hmm. it's built by our people, right? The majority of the teachers in Bethlehem, they call it built by Bethlehem, mm-hmm. or Bethlehem residents, the majority of them, right? And that's what public education is about. It's a community, right? A village coming together and educating our children to be the most successful citizens that they can be, to then come back and be adults and citizens of Bethlehem to strengthen the economy, to strengthen the community, and make Bethlehem the greatest place in the world, right? And what I think that another challenge is definitely, you know, financials, you know, budgeting. You know, we're not getting the funding that we used to before. And I think that there's a great opportunity for us to show and work as a community to show legislators and to show, you know, government, that public education does work, mm-hmm. right? And that if the funds are used correctly, if the budgets are used correctly, we can definitely build, you know, the brightest and best, you know, again, employees, you know, entrepreneurs, mm-hmm. athletes, you know, actresses,
actors. The next talent pipeline.
The next talent pipeline. If we use, you know, if we get the adequate funding, I think we'll be able to show that we can do that.
I want to talk a little bit about AI and technology and the future of learning. We're entering an entirely, you know, different educational era because of artificial intelligence and technology. What should schools be preparing students for that perhaps we're not preparing them for 5 or 10 years ago? And how do you make sure technology enhances education rather than replacing the human connection at its center? And, you know, I don't know if we're getting smarter, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. or if we're getting more lazy. Speak to me a little bit about that, and what's your perspective on that, and how are you integrating it?
So what I always say is that, you know, AI can't give a kid a hug, right?
Right.
So it will never replace a teacher, mm-hmm. right? It'll never replace the human aspect of it. You know, you remember when Wikipedia came out and Google came out, mm-hmm. and we were worried about that, and that, you know, was going to make students not be as critical thinkers and think on their own and be able to find sources on their own like we used to do back in the day in the library and a thesaurus and finding sources. But I think that with AI, we really just need to show our students, you know, how to use it. It's not going to go away, mm-hmm. right? It's there. But I think that as a district, we're working to use it in a very critical and smart way mm-hmm. to show our students that it's not, you know, to your point, it's not that we're being lazy. It's that we're being using it in a smart way, mm-hmm. but still having our students be critical thinkers and having a research on their own because AI is not 100% correct.
Correct.
Right?
Right.
Now, what it does is, and it's getting smarter every day, is that it does choose from a whole plethora of sources out there. I know you've probably used it to ask whatever question, and sometimes
to
do research, and sometimes it is laziness. Oh, I don't want to go to Google. Hey, AI, how do I, this dishwasher is not working. How do I fix it? And it gives you all of those things, but you still have to read the manual, right? If you want to fix that dishwasher, you still have to do the work. Yeah, AI found that for you, but you still have to be a critical thinker and be able to read the instructions.
Step in there and actually do it.
And be able to do it,
yeah.
right? So that's how I feel about AI. I mean, it's something definitely that's growing very rapidly. And I think, you know, we are getting a good handle on it and showing our students how to use it correctly.
Yeah, and I think it has the potential to increase productivity. In my work, you know, from a research perspective, I use it a lot for research. And it really kind of gathers that information in record time that, mm-hmm. you know, would take me hours or has taken me hours and hours and hours of, work time. But whether it be in business or in education, that seems to be the common theme of everybody when I'm asking them about how things are becoming integrated. They're starting to, pick up on productivity as a result of that. So that's exciting. You've talked about leadership as a partnership. How do you lead a district of more than 12,000 students within the Bethlehem School District and more than 20 schools without making the superintendent's office the center of everything? Like, you are at the center,
yes.
but how do you make it about everybody else and, make it a partnership?
Yeah, so definitely I'm huge on collaboration, huge on shared leadership,
mm-hmm.
right? I believe that everyone in your schools, in your communities, all of us play a part in developing our young people and our children. And, I always say that one superintendent in the field is better than three in the seat. Right. So I'm never in my office. Right. I always try to, if I'm not doing this, doing mm-hmm. a podcast, right after this, I'm going to go visit a school, walk around with the principal and get to, talk to teachers, talk to kids, because I believe that, I leave without a title.
Mm-hmm.
I'm the superintendent. I'm the leader of BASD. But, the folks doing the work, specifically the teachers, because they're the number one factor. Those are the ones that we need to empower to lead the next generation of our students and to teach them.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's at the, principal level and then obviously, the superintendent level. But I believe that I always believe in collaboration and never working in silos or, a top-down leadership style. I'm a servant leader, so I'm here to serve the students. I'm here to serve the schools and our community and supporting them in whatever they need.
Mm-hmm. I want to kind of shift gears here a little bit again. And I want to talk to you about resilience. As you go into that school today, and maybe you have a chance to tell your story a little bit about where you came from and how you got there, or maybe you're speaking to staff.
Mm-hmm.
You've overcome circumstances that could have easily changed the trajectory of your life. So when you're looking at a student and you're speaking to them, when you think about the adversity that you've faced and what did it teach you about resilience and how would you instruct that student now? I mean, you said you had to go past three drug corners,
mm-hmm.
right? And
mm-hmm.
sometimes there was a fight that ensued.
Mm-hmm.
Certainly you don't want the children going and,
Absolutely.
Facing the same circumstances and you want them to, react in a way that's going to be conducive to their future.
Yes.
What would you say to them?
I would say that, whenever you face adversity and whenever things get hard, there's always a light at the end of the tunnel, right?
Mm-hmm.
And always find that person and that advocate in your building to make sure that you let them know what you're going through. Because,
mm-hmm.
One of the biggest stories that I tell that, out of those 23 friends in my neighborhood that died through murder, one of them was killed right in front of me. You know, he was shot right in front of me. And I had to go to high school the very next day. And I was still in so much shock and still processing what happened that I didn't realize that I still had his blood on my sneakers. So I go to school the next day, and I walk through that entire high school building, and that one adult stopped me to say, hey, you have blood on your sneakers, or are you okay? Because if they would, I would have lost it, right? Because at that moment, I just needed somebody to talk to and just to process what happened. I didn't have a relationship with my counselor. And I'm not bashing the school. It's just that back then they weren't taught to do that, right? Mm-hmm. So that's why I always work in any place that I have ever led. I lead with that story because I want all of my children to be seen and heard and know that they have at least one adult in that building, that whatever adversity they're going through, whatever challenges they're going through, they can say, tap that person on the shoulder and say, hey, can we talk? Mm-hmm. Even if it's not a guidance counselor, it can be a coach, it can be the principal, it can be a teacher, it can be an aide, you know, it can be a lunch person, a custodian, just somebody in that building that has a relationship with that student can tap and say, hey, can we talk?
Mm-hmm. How do you define success at this point? I mean, so, you know, you were a teacher, now you're in leadership, you know, you're ready to take the district to the next level. How do you define success, not as superintendent, but as an educator and as a human being? And what do you hope students say about their experience in Bethlehem Area School District when you eventually walk out the door, which hopefully won't be for a while?
No, for a long time. I hope for a long time.
Yeah.
So for me, honestly, success has been staying alive, right? And being able to you know, outlive those circumstances that I did. Growing up in North Philadelphia, that to me is success, being able to wake up every day. And now I get to wake up every day and say that I'm the superintendent of the Bethlehem Area School District. You know, and I want all of my, like I just said, I want all of my students to walk out of Bethlehem and say, you know what, this place gave me every opportunity that I needed, and it met me where I was. And when I had my struggles, somebody was there to support me.
Mm-hmm.
That's how I would measure, you know, my tenure here in Bethlehem, that every student, you know, leaves here feeling like they were somebody, and that they're going to be somebody when they leave here, either in college, the military, the workforce, or, you know, starting their own business.
And finally, to the teachers and the administrators and the staff, and really the Bethlehem community who are listening, what do you want them to know about Renato Lajara? And what do you want them to understand about the kind of superintendent that you intend to be?
And I think they know this already. I want them to know that I'm a huge advocate. I'm a huge cheerleader for them, that I will fight for them, and you know, just be their biggest champion, that I love and respect them for what they do. Because, again, being a teacher, being an administrator, you know, a paraprofessional, custodian, transportation worker, you know, you work in central office. Education today is hard. It's a very hard profession, because we're the ones responsible for raising other people's children and teaching them, you know, how to be successful citizens. So, you know, I always tell them, you know, and I'm not shy about it. I always tell them that I love them very much, and that I really respect what they do as educators. And that anything I can do to make sure that their job is valued and respected, I will do.
We're excited for your leadership.
Thank you.
Dr. Renato Lajara's story is a reminder that leadership doesn't always begin in a boardroom. Sometimes it begins with a child who is new to a country, a student struggling to find his place, or a teacher who sees potential before anyone else does. And perhaps that is what makes his arrival in Bethlehem so compelling. He now has the opportunity to help shape the experiences of more than 12,000 students and to make sure that every one of them has someone in their corner, just as someone once stood in his. Dr. Lajara, thank you for sharing your story and your vision and your time with us. Welcome to Bethlehem, and thank you so much for joining us on Trailblazers.
Thank you for having me.